Chapter 2. Doug worked in secret whenever Z left the house. The folders on his desk were still optimistically full of Xeroxed articles on the poet Edwin Parfitt. And he was still writing a book on Parfitt, in that its bones continued to exist on 40 printed pages and 2 separate diskettes. The wallpaper on his computer, Z had set it up, was the famous photo of Parfitt kissing Edna St. Vincent Millay on the cheek. But what Doug was actually sitting down to write, after a respectful silence for the death of both his career and the last shred of his manhood, was book number 118 in the Friends for Life series, Melissa Calls the Shots. He hid the document on his hard drive in a file called Systems Operating Folder 30. This book, unlike the Parfitt monograph, even had an actual editor, a woman named Frida, who called once a week to check his progress. Doug's stopover in the land of preteen literature was only the latest in a wretched chain of events. Lack of money, paralysis on the monograph, failure to find employment, surreal indignity of moving into the coach house on Z's mother's estate. But it would be the last. He would get this done and get paid. And then, because he'd be on a roll, he'd get other things done. He would publish the Parfitt book, he'd land a tenure-track post, and somehow along the way, his hair would grow thicker. He'd found Frida through his friend Leland, a luckless poet who wrote Wilderness Adventures at the same press for $2,000 a pop. Leland talked like that, and he drank whiskey because Faulkner had. "They give you the entire plot," he said, "and you just stick to the style. Really, there is no style. It's refreshing." Leland claimed they took a week each, and Doug was enchanted with the idea of shooting out a fully formed book, like some kind of owl pellet. He hadn't written fiction since grad school. When he'd published a few experimental stories, talking trees, towns overcome with love, that now mortified him, even if Z still adored them. But these publication credentials, plus Leland's endorsement, landed him the gig. He knew nothing about Wilderness Adventure, but the press was suddenly short a writer for their middle-grade girls series, and desperate enough to hire a man. And so, here he was. The money would be nice. The coach house was free, but not the food, the car payments, the chiropractor. And that last wasn't optional. If Dr. Morsi didn't fix Doug's back twice a week, he'd be unable to sit and work on anything at all. Frida sent him 4 other books from the series, plus a green binder labeled the FFL Bible, with fact sheets on each character. "Melissa hates dark chocolate," came several bullet points above Melissa's grandfather, Boppy, died of cancer in number 103.
"The first chapter," Frida told him on the phone, "introduces the conflict, which is the populars on the team. Will Melissa ever be goalie, etc.?"
He'd never met Frida, but imagined she wore pastel blazers.
"The second chapter is where you recap the founding of the club. Our return readers skip it so you can plagiarize chunks from other volumes. The rest will be clear from the outline. Everything's wrapped up at the end, but there's that thread you leave hanging. What's wrong with candy, which is where 119 picks up. 119 is being written already, so as we tell all our writers, it's important you don't make uninvited changes to the world of the series."
Doug took comfort in the fact that this was clearly a memorized speech, part of the formula. He dumped the books at the thrift store, hid the Bible pages among some old tax forms, then went to the library every day for a week to skim the series. And meanwhile, the little house was strangling him, tightening its screws and hinges. There was an infestation of ladybugs that spring, a plague straight out of Exodus. Not even real ladybugs, but imposter Japanese beetles with dull copper shells, ugly black underwings jutting out below. Twice a day, Doug would suck them off the window screens with the vacuum attachment, listening as each hit the inner bag with a satisfying thwack. The living ones smelled like singed hair. Whether from landing too close to light bulbs or from some vile secretion, no one was sure. Sometimes Doug would take a sip of water, and it would taste burnt, and he would know a bug had been in that glass, swimming for its life and winning. There was a morning in May, notable only for Z storming around in full academic regalia, late for commencement, when Doug, still in bed, nearly blurted it all out. "Wasn't it a tenet of a good marriage that you kept no secrets beyond the gastrointestinal?" Hundreds of movies and one drunken stranger in a bar had told him as much. And so he almost spilled it, casual-like, as she tossed shoes from the closet. "Hey," he might have said,